And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with host T. Ramon and Sco.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalists Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Scope. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance. We'll be chopping it up for this edition just to talk about HBCU sports, sports in, at large, and all the things that are happening around the globe, it seems, over the past week. It seems like with HBCUs, it is an incredibly important weekend, some season-defining weekend for a lot of teams. And NFL just got to the halfway point, and things are shaping up there. You got some NBA intrigue in Golden State and in Houston. You have some of the awards that have been going out in baseball this over the past couple of days. They spread them out in the off season, so we look to have a full show. And on top of that, we're going to have with us, Donald Ware. He's the has a host of a radio show called From Press Box to Press Row, and he is the voice of the North Carolina A&T Aggies, who are really right now in the thick of the race in the MEAC. This could be a big weekend for them or not. So, Roscoe, how you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, T. Raymond. A little down about my Steelers and Le'Veon Bell, but you know, I'm not surprised that it came to that. So, but we'll move on, and you know, I'm looking forward to a good show, a great show with Donald. You know, he knows all things Aggies and MEAC and black college football, and he's going to tell us, you know, who's going to do what to who and how they're going to do it. So I'm looking forward to talking with him.
Yeah, well, we're going to chop up the Le'Veon Bell situation there, because that guy, I'm all for what he did, and maybe there are people who will be against that, but I think he made a really wise move, irrespective to his own personal fortunes. But we'll move on beyond that. But we want to really chop it up with Donald when, on the MEAC, because it's going to be a huge weekend. And I mean, they sent out the tiebreaker press release this week about all the different permutations of what could possibly happen. But we want to bring on right now Donald to talk with us now. We're going to have with us Donald Ware. Are you there, Donald?
I am here. How are
you? Hey, how you doing, sir? This is good. This is Tim Turner along with Roscoe Nance.
Tim and
hey,
Roscoe.
Donald, hey, Donald, my man. How you doing? Let's get right to this. No, forget about the tiebreaker, because you know what's going to happen. You know who's going to win it. So who's going to win it?
Well, I mean, I think ultimately Bethune is going to beat FAM, and then A&T. You know, I mean, I don't think it's a slam dunk, though. Obviously, in either one of these games, because it's a rivalry game, so all of the different stats and all of that, you really throw out the window. I think, you know, Central's they're a better team than what their record would indicate. You know, in my opinion, and just kind of looking at them, and I know they actually had a really bad loss against Bethune-Cookman, a game they should have won and really I thought had wrapped up last Thursday. It's going to be a tough game for A&T, but I think ultimately A&T wins, and then I think ultimately Bethune wins, and then A&T wins the conference outright and represents the conference in the Celebration Bowl.
Well, okay, well, Tim, what's been going on with A&T? They started off so impressively with you know, the victories over Jacksonville State and East Carolina, and blew out Gardner Webb, then stumbled against Morgan State, lost FAM. And people kind of, you know, turned on them a little bit. So what's with them now at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think ultimately, you know, the Aggies are on the right track. I think it all begins, you know, offensively begins with the running game. It's been the running game that's been rather consistent all year, but you look at Lamar Raynard, he's played well the last three or four games. He did not play against Savannah State. he was in concussion protocol, and so, you know, I venture to say we'll know here in the next couple of days if he's going to play. But if I had to guess, he would play because, of course, the last time that A&T was in Durham, it didn't go too well for A&T, and a lot of that was because Lamar Raynard did not play. But I think they're on the right track now, you know, an unfortunate loss to Morgan State. And then, in essence, I think that A&T gave the game away against Florida A&M. I don't want to take anything away from Florida A&M, but, you know, when you don't score any points in the second half, you put it on cruise control, you know, it comes back to bite you, and it did against FAMU. So, actually, both of A&T's losses were both home, which A&T rarely loses at BB&T Stadium.
So are you trying to say that it's pretty much a lock you're going to see A&T end of this season in Atlanta in the Celebration Bowl?
Nah, I can't say it's a lock because, you know, I feel like A&T will win and I feel like Bethune will win. But, again, those are two rivalry games. So my opinion is that, you know, A&T would be in. But in terms of it being a lock, no, because, you know, again, Central and FAMU are definitely going to come into play.
Well, you know, you've been bullish on Florida A&M since before the season started, and I know, remember you talking about, you know, watch out for them, they're going to be dangerous. So kind of talk about, you know, their path. You know, they were rolling for a minute there, and then they stumbled a couple of times, losing to Howard and South Carolina State. So where are they?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, again, that's part of the reason I think Bethune – wins this game. I think FAM is definitely going to get up for the game against Bethune. You got to in this Florida Classic. But you and I have talked about this, Roscoe. The very thing of what I liked about FAMU has been the very thing that has been not so good the last couple of weeks, and that's been Ryan Stanley, the quarterback. You know, I had always said and contended that he was an elite level type of quarterback in the MEAC. He hasn't played particularly well. Further, their defense, which was really good, I was very impressed in the game against A&T. I mean, I was extremely impressed with Florida A&M's defense. I thought it was much better than I and a lot of people thought that they were, has not been very good the last couple of weeks. I mean, you got to give Howard credit. They're a pretty high-powered offense. But for South Carolina State to be able to score 44 points, that doesn't bode well. So, you know, it's been a mix, I think, of your quarterback play, which I don't think Willie Simmons is totally sold on Ryan Stanley, and then the defense just hasn't been good the last couple of weeks for the Rattlers.
Well, as it relates to Ryan Stanley, you know, if I were the kind of guy to say I told you so, I would say I told you so, but I'm not that kind of guy.
Well, I mean, listen, he hasn't played. I mean, you know, he was having a decent season. I think what I really liked, and again, I do preface it by saying elite level as opposed to elite quarterback, because I think he has a lot of really good skills. I mean, this is a kid that can throw the football, he can make the throws, throw it down the field, and he can also run with the football. That's one of the things, though, we have not seen from Ryan Stanley this year, because Florida A&M has a good running game. But the other piece of not only Ryan Stanley was the piece of Willie Simmons coming in as the head football coach, played his college football at Clemson, where he did, you know, he was a solid quarterback. You know, he's been an offensive guru, Alcorn State with those SWAC championships, so on and so forth. So I thought the combination of the two bolded well, and I guess for a minute it did, but I guess not so much as of late.
Yeah. Well, you know me, often wrong, but never in doubt. I'm going with Florida A&M because I believe in the law of averages. Bethune-Cookman has beaten them 7 in a row, so, you know, both teams are due. Cookman is due for a loss to them, and FAM is due for a win. So I'm picking.
Well, is anybody surprised that South Carolina State really has had the season that they've had, given the losses that they had from the team?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yes. I saw this football team, you know, in action against A&T, and I came away thinking that's not a very good football team. I mean, quite frankly, but that again, that you know, that was towards the beginning of the season. It's, you know, it's potentially Buddy Pough's last year, and I think, you know, all of a sudden it's clicked, because I think you know, when you look at the quarterback play, I mean, Tyrese Nicky's not going to beat you with his arm per se, but he's, you know, when it comes to running the football, I mean, this kid can get it done. He's got great speed, and it's the kind of quarterback that Buddy Pough has always liked, that kind of quarterback that can move, can do some things with his legs, hasn't, you know, doesn't do it as well with his arms. So, I mean, it's really been, I think, the play of Tyrese Nick that has really propelled South Carolina State 3 straight wins. And they are still, I mean, for all intents and purposes, and at least from a mathematical standpoint, they're still in the race for the MEAC crown as well.
Yeah, all it takes is them to win out and for Cookman,
for Fam
and A&T to lose.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is mind-blowing, that could happen, though. That could happen. And, you know, for Buddy's sake, you know, I would love to see that happen, you know, because he's really, you know, a class coach, a good guy, you know, and he gets it. You know, he's been put in some in a tough situation, you know, with the financial crisis that South Carolina State has faced over recent years, and then, you know, the schedule that he has to play, you know, like, you know, when the season starts, he has three losses pretty much already because he's playing, you know, FCS opponents, you know, those first three games or so. So, you know, my hat's off to him, and I just wish him well, and I hope that the Bulldogs can summon up whatever it is they need to summon up, you know, win those last two games. And if this is to be his last season, that he would go out, you know, in style.
Yeah, no, agreed. I mean, I don't know if the, you know, the UCF streak, what is it at, 22 or 23 games? It may have started with South Carolina State going back to last year, or at least they were part of that, you know, or part of that streak. So, no, I agree. You're right. They play those FBS level, not FBS level, they play FBS schools. I think even last year, Roscoe, maybe it was all three of their out-of-conference game may have been FBS opponents. So you're right. I mean, and I agree with you 100%. I think the financial situation, I mean, look, 2 years ago, South Carolina, they were getting ready to close South Carolina State 2 years ago, you know, but I agree with you. And, you know, the football program, though, has always seemed to be that program that has been able to, you know, make money or at least be able to sustain better than other programs are able to. But, you know, but when the university's in trouble, all that goes away and, you know, your scholarships go down and you don't get the kind of players that you once had. I don't think the game has passed Buddy Pough by at all. It's just, you know, to your point, I think it's a financial situation.
All right. Well, let's jump over to SWAC. They have, you know, interesting races over there, too, not as widely publicized probably as what's going on in the MEAC, but you have Alcorn and Jackson State, you know, what amounts to a division championship game, and the same, you know, with Grambling and Southern and Bayou Classic Thanksgiving weekend. What do you see happening there?
Wow, man, that's going to be such a great, you know, I mean, I think Southern wins. I mean, if you look at the way that both of these teams are playing right now, and by the way, I mean, the win by Grambling over Alabama A&M, even though it was a non-conference game, was a huge win for Grambling because Grambling had been squeaking by. I mean, they're squeaking by Arkansas Pine. And they, you know, I mean, and granted, don't get me wrong, Arkansas Pine Bluff has put up a bunch of points. But if you're Grambling and you're the two-time defending SWAC champions, you just do what you need to do with UAPB and move on. And they haven't been able to do that this year. They've struggled in some games. Meanwhile, Southern blanked Prairie View A&M. They blew Arkansas Pine Bluff out. So they're playing some really good football right now. And I think ultimately the baton is handed over to the Jaguars in that Bayou Classic this year.
And I think this week coming up, I think both Grambling and Southern are off this week, if I'm not mistaken. So they're resting up for their Thanksgiving weekend game, which is for all the marbles there. And where Jackson State and Alcorn are playing down in Norman in the Soul Bowl. So it's going to be a really hot weekend on the eastern side, at least.
Tim. It is not the Soul Bowl.
I'm sorry. I'm not Mike Rubenstein. My bad.
You're right. That's just a name that the white folks in Mississippi gave it.
I said, I'm not Mike Rubenstein.
It's Jackson State versus Alcorn. That's what it is. Okay, go ahead, Donald.
No,
we were flashing back to our former days.
I know, yeah. I know, I like it. I mean, it's all good, you know. It's all good. And, I mean, we got to – you know, listen, I have been one that for the last 4 or 5 years has really criticized, you know, and I don't know, you can agree with me or not, what Jackson State has done in terms of their coaches. You know, first of all, in my opinion, they should have never gotten rid of Rick Comegie, and that's why Jackson State has been so bad the last 4 or 5 years or so. You know, Harold Jackson didn't get a fair shake. You know, then you look at Tony Hughes. He has, you know, less than 3 years to try to complete the job. But I must also say that Jackson State has won 2 straight games since they've gotten rid of Tony Hughes, and they're on the cusp. I don't know that they can beat Alcorn State, but I think the bigger thing is the fact that Jackson State is still right here. I think that's even the bigger story. And, I mean, kudos to you. I still don't agree with all the coaching moves they made, but at the end of the day, right now, they're still in contention for that Eastern Division crown.
Well, that's the story of the year for me this way. That is the story of the year because they don't have anywhere near the respect or the cachet that they have had from Jackson State teams in the past. Whereas Alcorn has been perennially a threat.
When you talk about Jackson State's coaching moves, it goes beyond, back beyond Comegie, you know, back to when Bob Hughes was coaching. His successor, Bell, I think it was James Bell, you know, a high school coach who had a losing record as a high school coach, and that's where it started, and the program has not recovered since then. And I think as far as Harold Jackson was concerned, when he came in, you know, he was, to me, he was past his prime. He should have gotten that job after Bob Hughes when he was younger.
Right.
He would have had a shot, and they should not have let Comegie go. I mean, you know, he won a SWAC championship. You know, lost a couple on, you know, some very just wild plays. I mean, Arkansas Pine Bluff completes what like a 99-yard pass to go into overtime and win, and then. Was it Southern the kid catches the ball but loses his bearings on the field and is out of bounds? You know, for a shoot, what would have been a sure touchdown?
Right.
I mean, you know, they win those games and it's a different story. You know, but and the Jackson State politics always come into play. So it's just unfortunate. And it'll be interesting to see how it works out now. And as far as Hughes goes, you know, Hughes came in, you know, to me with no real coaching credentials. I mean, his thing at Mississippi State was recruiting, you know, not necessarily as coaching. And, I mean, he was a great recruiter at Mississippi State, but that doesn't necessarily translate when you come to a Jackson State because it's much easier to recruit at Mississippi State because you have more to offer a kid than you do coming to a Jackson State in terms of facilities and, you know, everything else, exposure. So that's – if he could recruit at Jackson State like he did at Mississippi State, then it would have been a smart move. But that wasn't happening, and it never happens like that. And that's
– Here's another thing to think about. Hasn't Jackson State won twice since he was – left the coaching staff at Jackson State?
That was very interesting. He was the air raid guy, and they never scored 20 points in any of the games, you know, in, what was it, 3 games?
Right.
That he was their offensive coordinator.
And he's gone, and they've kind of turned it around on offense.
Yeah, first game he was gone, they put up like 30. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know what these schools are thinking when they – hire guys like that, you know. I guess, you know, some people's water is still wetter and their ice is still colder, you know, if you know what I mean.
Right.
That's true. Well, Donald, what do you think about Hampton leaving the MEAC and going to the Big South?
Yeah. They went to the Big South, and, yeah, they'll be eligible next year for football. Well, you know, my thought was that, I mean, I didn't really have a problem with Jackson State leaving. Hampton leaving. It was the way that Hampton left. You know, they made the announcement. It was about a year ago at this time. They said that they were leaving. They were leaving the conference to join the Big South next year. They didn't go through any of the proper protocols. They were supposed to have submitted a letter the June 30th prior to and go through all those protocols. And, you know, I think it was a lot of arrogance. I think they were just going to be – thought they were going to walk out of the MEAC and there weren't going to be any repercussions. You know, I thought the MEAC took a little bit of a longer time than I would have liked for them to have responded, but ultimately they did. Hampton was going to leave anyway, but they had to pay some money on their way out. And you're seeing the residuals of Hampton leaving the conference this late in the season. I mean, you look at FAMU and South Carolina State last week. It's a non-conference game. Nowhere in the world a non-conference game should be played this late in the season between two conference schools. So you're seeing the residuals of that. But Hampton paid a little bit of a price this year. I mean, yeah, if you look at Hampton's record, they're 6-3, but they played Division III schools, they played Division II schools. Nobody in the MEAC would play them. And if I'm the MEAC, yeah, I'm, rightfully so, you don't play them. You want to leave, leave. And it didn't have to be the bad blood, but I think Hampton caused that. So didn't have a problem with them leaving ultimately, but there's a proper way to do it.
Well, do you understand the rationale in them leaving?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I can understand it. I mean, I can understand they want more than what the MEAC is offering. I get that. And they felt like they can get that at the Big South Conference. To me, the Hampton never really had any history. First of all, if you look at HBCU conferences across the board, I mean, the MEAC is the newest conference, so there's little history there. And then Hampton in the MEAC, window of history. The Hampton's history, really, and a lot of the success they had goes back to the CIAA days. So, you know, that's fine. They wanted to leave. I don't have a problem with it. They wanted more. I get it. But there's a proper protocol in the way you do that.
So you keep saying they wanted more. So what more does Big South have to offer?
Well, you know, for one thing, to me, Roscoe, you know, they have, and I realize that, you know, the MEAC has sort of come out now and they have to deal with, well, they already always had to deal with ESPN, but now they have the ESPN3 and the ESPN+, so games are basically shown each and every week. But one of the things I think that the Big South has is a digital network. You know, and I think that's something that the MEAC really, in my opinion, has to look at from a marketing standpoint to be able to have something like that. And in all fairness, now I think they're working towards that, and I think that the deal that they signed with ESPN, maybe the latter part of August, where now most of the games are going to be shown, is a big deal. So actually, you know, Hampton lost out on that. You know what I mean? Because there's only two conferences in FCS that have the deal with ESPN, and that's SWAC and of course, the MEAC. So they definitely lost out on that. So that was one of the things that I looked at that time, which now, you know, the MEAC has really stepped up sort of their, you know, their visuals, if you will, and being on TV. So, you know, I don't know. That was just one of the things I looked at. Beyond that, you know, it's going to be much more travel, I think. You're coming from a conference that I think is a solid conference in the MEAC, but the Big South is on the rise. I mean, what, Monmouth had a very good season last year. Kennesaw had a very good season last year. You know, you got, you know, Campbell, which I live like 8 miles down the road from Campbell, is coming into the Big South next year. So, you know, it remains to be seen how great Big South football is. But again, that's one of the things I looked at was sort of that marketing part of the deal in that digital network, something the Big South had that the MEAC is working towards now.
But they're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting in terms of gate and building these rivalries up with people who really don't look at them as HBCUs would look at them. They, you know, the MEAC and the SWAC people who watch HBCU football will be excited to play Hampton, whereas opposed to a Campbell or whomever else is in the conference over there, look at them as just another opponent, or maybe even a lesser opponent. So their gate's going to suffer at home until they establish some kind of rivalries or some sort of a competitiveness against these guys.
Well, not really, and the reason I say that is because Hampton doesn't have a good following anyway. So, you know what I mean? Like they don't really have a good following to begin with. So that part of it, you know, really isn't going to affect them. So I don't, you know, Roscoe, it's a great. I mean, I think you bring up a great point in terms of why they actually left. Maybe. But this is the other thing. We're talking about it from the football side because we're in football season. But I think one of the things Hampton looked at was from the basketball aspect of things. The problem with them looking at it, they looked at, okay, somebody got a number 13 seed last year or something like that, which typically is higher than what the MEAC gets. The problem is the Big South at the end of the day is still going to be a one bid league. So you didn't really do anything in basketball either.
The conference gets the number 13 seed, but you have to win the conference.
Right, to get that, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So there's no guarantee that you are going to win the conference.
Right.
It's just...
So, yeah, and it's to your point, no at-large berth. I mean, that conference is not getting an at-large berth. Neither is the MEAC. So, you know, I think you bring up a good point. I mean, what really is the rationale behind, you know, I don't know. I think they tried to paint it as more of a basketball move. But, again, the Big South right now is a one-bid league.
Yeah. And to your point, about Hampton not having a following, and that's true. But even at that, they're not going to be playing schools that their meager following wants to see. So it's going to be even less. You know, their fans, you know, they draw reasonably well for when they play Norfolk State. You know, Howard is a big game for them. You know, when A&T comes to town, A&T will bring fans up
right.
with them.
Right.
They're not going to get that with Kennesaw. They're not going to get that with Monmouth. So, and I don't think they're ever going to build any type of intense rivalry with any of those schools in that conference unless they can finagle another black school to come in.
But it's a good point. And see, you know, we could look at them a little bit akin to Tennessee State. The difference, however, on the surface is that Tennessee State has a great tradition of football, and they got and athletics, quite frankly, and they have a great fan base, where Hampton doesn't really have that. So, and the great thing that Tennessee State does every year, if you look at their non-conference, they have four non-conference games. Generally,
exactly.
All four of those non-conference games are against black colleges.
Exactly, because the OVC, you know, they have a seven-game conference schedule, so Tennessee State can, you know, work their schedule to play, you know, four of the schools that their fans are really interested in seeing, you know, a Jackson State or Bethune-Cookman or, you know, or Florida A&M or Southern or schools like that. And that's how, you know, they're able to sustain because, you know, when Austin Peay comes to town,
there's nobody there.
Nobody's
there. Because I watched a couple of their games on ESPN3 against OVC people, and they're at home, and there's nobody there. TSU essentially has destroyed what they had before by going to OVC. They may have gained something in maybe less travel because the schools are clustered closer by. Maybe it's a financial thing. But they don't draw anywhere near. I mean, their big game with Jackson State and Memphis is a huge game. So, you know, people still look at those kind of rivalries.
Yeah, and I think they're going to start back playing. No, Southern is going to resume this rivalry with Florida A&M. But, you know, I mean, those kinds of games, you know, what made Tennessee State. I dare say by going into OVC, they have lost some of their allure and some of their standing amongst the HBCU powers. You know, they just aren't as highly regarded and respected, and I dare say even feared, as they once were.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. you're absolutely right, Roscoe. I mean, some of it, because if you look at it, like, we can talk about the OVC now and how good it is now, and most of that is because of how powerful Jacksonville State really is. But it wasn't that. I mean, it wasn't what 5-6 years ago that the OVC was okay. You know, they weren't that highly regarded. I think, again, Jacksonville State has raised the profile there. But, yeah, I mean, Tennessee State, you know, and I just don't understand, you know, kind of what's going on more recently. They seem to have good teams, good talent. They, you know, when we rank these recruiting classes, they get these recruiting classes and they get these players in. But, man, I mean, I think they're 3-5 right now, you know what I mean? So it's sort of been a struggle. I mean, they got that at-large berth to the playoffs, and they won a playoff game when they beat Butler back in 2013, but not too much has happened since then.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but that's, you know, what happens, you know, when you kind of take a blind eye to history and tradition and do things that I guess basically just don't make sense. But, you know, and a lot of these schools, you know, and I guess the talk has kind of quieted, you know, in recent years, you know, talking about moving up to the FBS level and that kind of thing. You know, those kinds of ideas just, to me, is not forward-thinking, really. I mean, you think you're thinking forward, but, you know, you're taking steps backwards. I mean, look at, you know, Florida A&M when they made their ill-fated decision to go to Division I-A at the time, and I think they're still paying for it. You know, they never recovered from that transition year. I mean, they took a beating all around.
I think Savannah State's going through the same thing, for what it's worth, because this is their last year in our FCS, right?
Yeah. Well, see, I mean, I don't know whose bright idea that was. I mean, they weren't competitive in Division II in the SIAC, so come on. What was the thinking there?
Yeah.
I mean, somebody really outsmarted themselves on that one.
So does this mean the MEAC's going to pick somebody up this year coming up? Are they talking? Are there rumors out there of who could possibly fill the spot for Savannah State?
Well, Dennis has been very tight-lipped about, you know, what's going on. You know, he says that they're looking and weighing their options and that kind of thing, but, you know, what does that mean, really?
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to this, but how many, you know, again, with MEAC, you know, really stepping up with and upping its partnership with ESPN, it seemed like a lot of college games, you can watch them all on ESPN3 or whatever the case may be. But I don't know, maybe that helps. I mean, I think it definitely helps the conference, and maybe it does help the conference to have, you know, some other schools join. I mean, I doubt, you know, you would see anybody like, you know, there had been some talk maybe a couple of years ago, Virginia State maybe moving up to Division I, or, you know, perhaps a Bowie State or something like that. I think that talk has kind of died down. But I don't know, maybe this deal with ESPN and them stepping it up a little bit makes it more attractive to some other schools, some other FCS schools to join the conference, perhaps.
Well, I think it would be a mistake to bring in a Division II program,
mm-hmm.
to have them move up. I think that would be a mistake.
Yeah.
If anything, you know, you try to woo another FCS school.
And
you look around.
Right.
Who would that be? Who would make sense?
And
it probably would have to be a non-HBCU in terms of proximity.
Yeah. Definitely. You know, and you're right.
So, how many independents are in that area that would be a fit for that? Or, I mean, who would be a fit?
Wouldn't necessarily have to be an independent.
Right. It'd have to be somebody from a conference.
From a conference,
right.
that sees the MEAC as a better option.
Right.
But wouldn't it be interesting to see somebody like a Bowie to come in there? Because, you know, just touching on them briefly, they're in the playoffs again. Bowie's going to be playing West Alabama this Saturday after they got a number 4 seed. So So they're in the Division II playoffs for the second year in a row. So after a 9-2 season, they've been pretty good the past couple, 3 or 4 years. So,
but can they afford to make the move? Because, you know, things change. You know, your scholarship allotment changes. You have to, you know, you go from 36 to what, 63, and
right.
Staffing. You have to add more sports. So it's more to it than just what you see on the field, you know.
Definitely.
What about the,
I mean, it's a financial commitment
all
the way around.
What about the facilities?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of facilities
I was going straight to that next. Is like, do they have a stadium that even accommodate the minimum for it to be at FCS? But
yeah, and that's a good point. I'm gonna, you know, I know I don't know how many fans that Bulldog Stadium seats, but it's, I mean, they've up in terms of the turf and all of that. They're up to date. They have a video scoreboard. I mean, I know those aren't the things that make the determinant in terms of what the NCAA is looking for. But I mean, they, you know, I'm trying to see if I can find how many, while we're talking, how many people they seat. It seemed like it, you know, the number 5,000 is sort of the number that's coming to mind, but, listen, I mean, I think with the – because this was a Bowie State athletics program that, if you go back 20 years ago, was essentially in shambles. They had part-time head coaches. Like, how do you run a program and your men's basketball coach is part-time? But look at – but to the point, look at them now. It was more of a commuter school, and I'm from that area, so it was more of a commuter school at one point. Now it's more than that. The campus has really grown. To your point, Roscoe, I don't know. I mean, I hadn't heard that talk lately. You know, what kind of money do they have? Can they afford to, you know, make that kind of move? I mean, I think they'd be in a better, you know, obviously, I would think that a Division II school would be in a better position to make a move to FCS than would an FCS school to FBS. But yeah. I don't know. I mean, I hadn't really heard. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I just find it interesting that, you know, Winston-Salem, you know, decided to pull the plug on it when they
right.
did, you know.
Right.
I would think that they're on a more solid footing than Bowie State. I don't, you know, they were at that time as compared to Bowie State at this point. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, the thing that happened with Winston, I think there was, once they really started to make the move, and I was sort of involved a little bit with the Winston program in 2009, which I think by that, I'm trying to think, by that time I think they were still on track. But what happened was it was a non-revenue sport that had some kind of scholarship thing, or basically, in essence, they got reprimanded by the NCAA, and so they had to, because of whatever the thing that happened with the non-revenue sport, they added an extra year to them moving on to the you know, to full status, not even as a MEAC school, but as an FCS school. And so already with trepidation in terms of making the move by some, they looked at it as not even worth taking that another year or that extra year to continue on, because I think at that point they were like 2 or 3 years in, so they decided to pull the plug on it.
Yeah. But you know, they pulled the plug, but they did really well, you know, in going back to Division II. They had that real good run with Connell Maynard and going into the playoffs. So.
Yeah, they they still had some of that, you know, some of those players that they had on scholarship and all of that. But yeah, they, you know, I mean, they were the ones. If Winston couldn't do it, you know, I'm just trying to. I mean, Virginia State is in a great situation. They have superior, at least on a Division II level, they have superior facilities. I mean, if you look at the football stadium, it's, you know, it's 10,000. It's a beautiful stadium. It's got the video scoreboard and all that. They already had a nice on-campus basketball arena. They built a new one that holds like 10,000. I think it's a convocation center, and it's multi-purpose, but that's where they play their home games. They got a, you know, baseball facilities. They have softball facilities. They have the facilities to be able to make the move. But again, I hadn't heard more recently that they were in fact trying to make that move to FCS.
Well, we'll stay tuned see what happens there. And as always, Donald, you know, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your insight and letting us know that it's going to be South Carolina State sharing the championship.
You heard it.
I knew
first.
You wasn't going to let me get away, Roscoe, without saying something. But, no, I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, take care.
Right,
okay,
take
now.
Care.
All right, bye.
A lot of good insight from Donald over there on all things HBCU. The brother covered it from stem to stern on this.
Yeah, he does an in-depth job, and he is the only person that I'm aware of who tracks recruiting at the HBCUs at the FCS level. He rates the recruits every year, and he does a phenomenal job. So hats off to Donald.
Oh, absolutely. Well, so you talked about our HBCUs and all the things they got going on, and then we could just take a brief little swipe over into NCAA Division I football things. The top four teams haven't changed: Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Michigan, with Georgia and Oklahoma at 5 and 6. So, Alabama, I think they're gonna. I call these games like these active bye weeks, because Alabama is getting ready to is playing the Citadel this week before they play wrap up the regular season with Auburn. At Tuscaloosa. So it looks like they're going to, who knows what's going to happen with them, because now my feeling is with Tua, I'm not going to try his last name anymore, with Tua hurt, that gives Georgia a better chance during the SEC championship game if this kid is indeed hurt.
Well, not really, because he has another week to heal up.
True, but it's going to be a knockdown dragout with Auburn. I'm thinking they're probably going to do like what Mississippi State did, which I thought was real Bush League on their part, for actively going at the kid's knee during that game. They hit him low a bunch, and I thought that was poor football. But
I think Alabama has learned a lesson from that, and that Jake Fromm has knees too.
Yeah, this is true. But I look at that from that. And Georgia also has scheduled an active bye week. They have UMass coming into Athens this week ahead of their season ender against Georgia Tech. I think it's in Athens. I'm not sure, but those two games. And then you got Notre Dame has a kind of a cushy game this week as well before they play. They close out their regular season against Southern Cal.
Doesn't
Michigan comes out with Ohio State.
Doesn't Notre Dame have Syracuse at some point?
They have Syracuse this weekend, and that could be a trap game. Or so you can look at it from that perspective. That may be a trap game.
Yeah, it's a big to-do playing at Yankee Stadium and all of that stuff. So and Syracuse has come on, pretty strong. So that could be a real interesting game. But I really don't foresee much changing, amongst the top four, really.
Really? Michigan's biggest challenges are going to be the two games at the end of the season. One, I think they close with Ohio State.
They close
and then it's the Big Ten championship. Pardon me?
Yeah, they end with Ohio State, yeah.
And then it's the Big Ten championship game, and I think they play Northwestern in the championship game. And that's not going to be a gimme for them. So those type of games right there, those type of things, if you lose early, it doesn't hurt you as much. Losing late kind of hurts you. So they're going to have to be on the watch, because Alabama and Clemson pretty much have cakewalks into the playoffs. It's the other guys that have some issues that down the road here.
Yeah. So true, so true.
Now, let's go over to your Steelers now and talk about Le'Veon Bell and what is your take on this? Because I have definite opinions on this. What do you feel about what he did?
Well, I mean, I just can't. I'm not feeling, turning your back on $14.5 million. I mean, I get it that you're career is short. You want to make all you can while you can. But, you know, he's not going to get that money back, regardless of how much he signs for going forward. I mean, that's money that he has lost. And,
okay.
You know, I just don't get it. And I think that, you know, you have to look at it for what it is. Okay, why weren't the Steelers willing to give him the long-term deal that he was seeking? Well, from where I stand, you know, it wasn't about talent. It's about, can you trust him? You know, he's had to sit out games for violating, you know, various rules and guidelines. And the other thing is with running backs, you know, the shelf life, you know, and he has a history of injuries. So.
And I think therein lies the biggest issue. I understand that the Steelers are notoriously cheap with running backs.
Well,
that's what I get there. And it's like, you can understand that. Because
the entire league undervalues running backs.
Right. Because it's because of the wear and tear that these guys have on their bodies, and it's diminished returns as the years go by. Not so much as the season goes, but as the years go by. But he hasn't shown any signs of letting up. Nonetheless, you're right. It's hard to turn your back on $14 million, but I look at what he just did. And this may be a massive stretch, a cavernous leap in logic, but
this may be a Kurt Flood moment. No, because what Kurt Flood did helped to change how business is done. The only thing that's going to change in this case is he will change teams. That's all that's going to change.
I think he'll get paid the money that he thinks he's worth, and he is assessing his worth. My thing was this. He comes back and plays the last 8 games of the season for the Steelers with their $14 million tag, fine and dandy. But at the same time, he puts 8 games worth of wear and tear. That's a minimum of 8 we're talking about, because the Steelers will probably make the playoffs. So it's 9, 10, 11 games he's putting on his body. They know they're not going to re-sign him. Why waste your time? Why waste getting yourself hurt or damaging yourself when you know that you got teams like Buffalo and New York, the New York Jets, and folks like that who are looking for running backs who will overpay.
Your point is well taken. Let's take my man, Dez Bryant. How much wear and tear did he put on his body in the first half of the season?
Enough to tear his Achilles in one practice.
So there are no guarantees.
Yeah.
There are no guarantees.
Well, you're right. There are no guarantees. At any time, anybody can get hurt.
And you know, you don't play thinking about getting hurt. Or do you? Do you play thinking about getting hurt?
Not a bit. When you walk out on the field, all you're talking about trying to do is to win. Wins and losses, you're not worried about getting hurt. And the deal is, but see, the thing is, too, it's a different scenario if Connor doesn't have the season that he's having, because the Steelers haven't even missed him.
Yeah, he lost his leverage when Connor started tearing it up. Here's the other thing. You know, the Le'Veon Bell that we've seen with the Steelers, we're never going to see him again.
Because it's not going to be the same offense. It's not going to be the same line. It's not going to be the same anything.
Exactly. Won't be the same set of circumstances, the same coaches,
right,
the same philosophy, the same quarterback. So
chances are he won't be playing against the same team 8 times a year in that division that also has something to do with how well he plays.
And see, you know, how patient a runner he is, how he hits the line and comes to a complete stop, makes the cut.
Right.
He can do that because of the line that he's running behind. So if he goes someplace else, he stops like that, and they're going to bury him right there.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
checking
in
from the
chime in. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got Derek Gervin on the line. He's the host of the Derek Gervin As Good As It Gets podcast. Derek played in the NBA with the 76ers and the New Jersey Nets, and he has a take on Le'Veon Bell from a professional athlete's perspective. I'm going to bring Derek on right now. Derek, you on with Roscoe Nance and Tim Turner.
How you doing, Roscoe? How you doing, Tim?
Hey,
how you
Derek,
doing?
How about you?
Pleasure. Good to talk to you guys already. Good. Well,
what's your take?
Me being an athlete, you know, I was played a few years in the pros. Just being there, it's a different game. And Le'Veon, football is totally different. You're talking about a running back that's getting the ball, having the ball 300 times in a year. And I know that can be very taxing on a player. I think Le'Veon has been the best running back for quite a while now. And it's time that he gets his due. A lot of the players on the team were kind of resentful of him wanting to sit out. But he's at the point in his career now, I believe he's 28, 29 years old. So you have to get the money that you can. The money in the NBA is guaranteed. It's not the same in the NFL. So when you have an opportunity to seize the moment, as they say, you have to do that. And I think what he's doing is the right thing for his career. I know it's hard to give up that $14.7 million or whatever, but maybe he knows something that we don't know. And I'm just wishing him well, and I hope things work out for him wherever he ends up.
Well, you make a very good point. And what you said is really the key to the whole thing, the guaranteed contracts. That's the key to the whole thing. And it's just the NFL system is rigged against players. Because
it's like it's a $100 million contract, but only $50 million of it is guaranteed, and I say only. It's the other $50 million you've got to work for, or you can get cut the end of the season, and you'll never see that $50 million.
I mean, even at that, you can work for it and earn it legitimately and still not get it because they can cut you on a whim.
Right.
You know, I mean, how many times have you seen, they ask a guy to restructure his contract? It could be coming off a Pro Bowl season, and if he doesn't restructure his contract, he's cut. So that is the biggest problem as I see it. And, he is rolling the dice in a sense and doing what he thinks is best. But and we really won't know how it works out until it works out, if it was a good decision or a bad decision until, he signs that contract and we see how it goes forward.
Well, the sad thing about the NFL is it's different than the NBA. In the NBA, the players and the commissioners, they work together.
Exactly.
The NFL, man, it's sad. These guys, the owner's doing their thing, and Goodell, and he's been quiet lately, thank goodness. But these guys, they don't work together. And then you got the problem with Malcolm Jenkins going on with, the player confronting him on the field, things like that. So
right.
You got friction going on. And the NBA, it's kind of smooth. You're always going to have a little, things that go on. But it's been a smooth transition for Adam Silver. The guys, they really believe in the players. And they even help. They don't mind the players being marketed. These guys in NFL, they don't get the publicity they can get. Your life
well, the only
is
people
much
in the NFL, they market the quarterbacks. That's it.
That's right.
Everybody
nobody
else
gets any kind of shine, but they have the most contentious, they have the most dangerous job, but in the most fractious labor disputes all the time, and they always get taken too. These guys, I don't know why they don't get more of everything, because they have the greatest risk than baseball, hockey, or basketball.
Well, the answer to that is simple. They won't stick together. They won't stick together. When they had the strike, look at the guys who crossed the line. And there's still strength in numbers, and if they stuck together, they could accomplish some things and get the things that
that they tried to get gained individually by, you know, doing what Le'Veon Bell did.
I agree.
Well, you're right about the NBA, because it seems like these people, they, as much as they compete against each other, and they do compete against each other, there seems like there's a great big fraternity among the players where, you know, the old heads will say, you know, I don't buy this hugging and shaking hands and all this other stuff. But nonetheless, you see the NBA is at its probably since maybe the Jordan Bird era or Magic era, this is the greatest it's been right now.
But see, here's the thing, though. The owners understand that they need the players because it wasn't that long ago that the league was, you know,
It was in trouble.
And the players, you know, they made some concessions that helped to bail the league out. And, you know, ever since then, it has blossomed, and they have worked together.
Well, the NBA is funny because if you look at it, now you got to play. You have pretty much have an all-star team. The game has changed just within our, you know, right in front of our eyes within the last 2 years.
Exactly.
Now it's been like every team pretty much has to have 3 stars on the team.
Yeah.
And it's
Philly
and
became,
you know,
the prohibitive favorite now in the East, right? The Celtics and everybody else.
Yeah, to be competitive, you got to have the third wheel on your team now. You know, that's what LeBron, you know, right now they're missing that. If you look at a lot of the teams, they're struggling. Boston, they don't know who the 3 guys are. You know, you got to have consistency. Some nights it's hurt Tatum's game. If you look at the way they're playing right now, because you have to try to get Hayward implemented, you know, get him back in the game. You got these other guys. Yeah, so Kyrie, I'll very good to him. So, yeah, it's a different game now. You have to have people that buy in. And you look at Golden State, they got Clay, they got Durant, and they got Curry.
But here's why teams are able to do that. It's because of the salary cap.
Yes, sir.
The NBA has a soft salary cap. They have exceptions and things like that. The NFL has a hard cap, and there's only so much money the teams can spend on players, and, you know, they allocate most of that to
the quarterback.
so everybody else kind of gets in what they can fit in.
Yes. How do you fix it? What do you got? Because you guys know this game.
The players have to fix it by banding together and saying, okay,
we just won't play. Yes, sir.
But is that going to happen?
If you say it's hard to get everybody to band together, you know, everybody talk to talk.
Exactly.
And that's, you know,
somebody,
right on it.
See, Tim Lou mentioning Kurt Flood before.
Yeah.
You know, he made a sacrifice. But you need masses to make that a similar sacrifice in order for this thing to have some effect.
Well, you saw many things like that in the past 2 days where the Rams and the Chiefs were saying, we're not playing on that field in Mexico City. That's our careers. And they moved the game to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
How often do you see people say stuff like, I'm not going?
Well,
that kind of
stuff. The reason that they said that because their career was threatened. They felt they were jeopardizing their career. They would be jeopardizing their careers by playing. So that's why they did that. But would they be willing?
You would think every Sunday they jeopardize their careers because that's a violent game.
But that's the nature of the game. I mean, that's what they signed up for. That's why they played the game, as a matter of fact, because of that. But to play on a beat-up, shoot-up field? No, they didn't sign up for that. No, they signed up to play on the nicest fields in the world. So I'm not going to jeopardize my career going down and playing on a soccer field that's been chewed up with concerts and who knows what else. No. And they need to have that same kind of commitment when it comes to the salary structure. And it takes leadership. It takes a strong voice.
And I hearken back to the days of the AFL when the All-Star game was in New Orleans, and you know the black players couldn't stay in the same hotel as their white teammates, and they weren't going to play the game. I mean, they were going to call the game off. Nationally televised at a time when the AFL was starving for exposure, and they just said, "We're not going to play," you know, and they got what they wanted. So you have to have people willing to stand up and be counted. And I'm
yeah, that was back in, I think, 65. So, yeah, that was something.
Yeah.
But they probably haven't been together since then.
Yeah, but that was the AFL, too. That wasn't the NFL.
Right.
And, you know, where are in the NFL, where are the guys like, you know, an Oscar Robertson back in the day or Bill Russell, you know, a guy like LeBron James today who speaks out or Steph Curry who speaks out, you know, where are those guys in the NFL?
They're
invisible.
There are two guys that have done that. One is still unemployed. One is with the Carolina Panthers who got ejected last week for a cheap shot.
Yeah. But see, if the entire team, it doesn't even take the entire team, say if the star quarterback made a stand, if Brady spoke up, if Aaron Rodgers spoke up, if Drew Brees spoke up, think about what a difference that would make. You know, on whatever the issue is, whether it's social injustice, whether it's the salary structure, or whatever.
Right.
Somebody's going to listen to them.
Well, that's a point to ponder, but we want to roll on out of here. We want to thank Donald Ware for being on the show this evening, and we'll see you guys on the next edition for Express Yourself with T. Ramone and Scope, where you give the opportunity for everybody to
express yourself.
You guys have a good night.
Okay, you too, my man.
Thank you. Pleasure.